Hi, welcome to podcast number 41 of the Alexis L podcast. And we're putting out more content at the moment because of the terrible murderous assault by Israel on Gaza. And AJ, who we spoke to on podcast number 40, has been arrested and she is being held on remand because she apparently broke conditions of her bail. So it's the first time we've had an interviewee arrested and jailed. It could happen to anybody. I think in the coming weeks and months, it may not be the last.
We're sending our well wishes to AJ,
yes,
of course.
Yes, absolutely, to them, to AJ and everybody at Palestine Action. I think you are heroes. Nevertheless, this interview is with somebody who I think I'm closer to politically. One of the moving things about the demonstration on Saturday was how many young people there were, beautiful young people of all races, creeds, and colours. And then there was the cohort of Jewish anti-Zionist Jews who brought the average age up considerably, really. There is a cohort of which I am part, I think, of older anti-Zionist, anti-Israel Jews. My interviewee today, Jenny Manson, is one of those. She is co-chair of Jewish Voice for Labour, a group that has been hideously maligned over the last few years, and we get to talk about that. And I think in some ways, I mean, obviously I am, by inference, bigging myself up, but I think that these Jews who support Palestine are in many ways the best of us. They're people who have eschewed tribalism to think about the suffering of others, that they have not let themselves sink into the pit of revenge or, my tribe, right or wrong, but have really thought about the suffering of people who are not themselves. And somebody like Jenny Manson, I think, intellectual, Jewish family, highly educated, highly successful as a civil servant. But she is just, in many ways, these people. When you see, I don't know, the editor of the Jewish Chronicle, for instance, Jake Wallace Simmons, he represents in many ways, I think, the worst of humanity, because he cannot see beyond his own tribal identity, his own personal advancement, I think, because it's very easy to be pro-Israel now. You are massively rewarded for doing it. If you are anti-Israel, you pay a price. So this is my interview with Jenny Manson. So, Jenny Manson, tell me your story and your Palestine story, story in general.
Okay, I'd like to do that very much. Well, I've got an unlikely start. I was a member of the Labour Party all those years since I was a student. At Oxford, and I never joined anything to the left. I was called the soft left locally for not supporting at the time the campaign for Labour Party Democracy and Ben and so on. I mean, they liked me because they thought I was heart in the right place.
You were active. You went to your...
I was a Labour councillor in the 80s. I stood for Parliament.
In my area,
in Hendon North, yes. Right. But when I stood for Parliament, I made a terrible mistake. This isn't quite a political point, but I will make it. I was by that time a tax inspector, and I discovered that you were not allowed to even be the candidate and still be a civil servant. Right. I'd be booted out of the revenue.
Yeah.
And I did what I do now. I played behind the scenes a little bit. And the head of the union, which was called the First Division Association, very grand, spoke to the head of the revenue. And he said, I'll let her back in, but she has to come by a back door, so to speak. And I can't give any paper guarantees.
What was your official title?
Inspector of Taxes.
Is that like how many of them are there?
I can't remember. But not huge number.
So you were like pretty high. You were
quite high. Quite high. My time of terrific height was when I was a oil tax inspector, right, dealing with Shell and Exxon. And the strange thing about the revenue in those days, I've done a book called Public Service on the Brink, right, but was that if you were trusted, I rather like being trusted. I told you, I've become very sort of, I was very disobedient at school all the time, but as a tax inspector, I like this feeling of responsibility. If you were responsible, you're basically allowed to make huge deals. So I used to go and deal with Shell and Exxon
and say, we'll
agree that this legislation means this and we'll go 50-50 on the money kind of thing. I would be negotiating with the top of the Shell tax team. It was a very nice era. It was before Blair came and said public service ought to be more like the commercial service, and you've got to write mission statements and so on. So anyway, I was let back into the revenue. I phoned a number after I'd done reasonably well but not got my selection. I phoned a number and a real person answered. I said, oh, I was told I could phone this number. I said, oh, yes, it's the head of personnel. We were expecting you. So this was the good old revenue.
Right. I'll just jump in and say that, this issue is obviously it's about Jews in the struggle for justice for the Palestinians. And I think sometimes we are typified as, you know, wild-eyed political fanatics. And somebody like you, somebody who's been in the highest echelons of the civil service. We'll get onto this, elderly grannies who are often we're typified as these vile, anti-Semitic, racist, political lunatics. And we are people of the, well, you are anyway, people of the highest probity and moral.
Well, I'd like to think so.
Moral thoughts, and which is what I think what has led you to, defending the Palestinian people is the same moral probity that you had as a tax inspector. We'll get into that anyway.
I completely agree. So, all right. So this is my Israel-Palestine story, and then I'll come to how I got involved in all this in 2017. My mother was brought up in Palestine for 10 years between pogrom 1920 till 1930. She then came to England, meant to be for holiday, saw my father, who was an English Jew, fell for him, and he was accused of cradle snatching, so he wouldn't pay any attention. She was 15, he was 23 or something like that. But years, by the time she was 20, they got married. Now, my experience, my feeling about Palestine was, again, a bit like my feeling about politics. I didn't get to the obvious conclusion.
Yes.
Like I didn't do with Ben. I condemned everything Israel did all the way through, hated Israel when I went there as a young girl between school and university, just 17.
What about it did you?
I hated the already racism. I got off the boat. I went by boat by myself. Nowadays, it's funny, I was only just 17 and I went by myself to visit my mother's family. The by myself meant that I'd decided where I'd go for the 3 months I was there. I mean, it doesn't sound much like that, but I think about 17-year-olds now probably don't go by themselves to organise their trip. Right, my parents weren't worried about me at all. But when I got off the boat, I'd had a bit of a fling with a boy on the boat. And when I got off the boat, my uncle Itzhak said to me, "Don't go with Arab Jews." He was an Iraqi Jew. And you know, that was the beginning of a disillusionment.
Right.
From that moment, that sense that somehow there were people called Arabs who weren't like us, let alone non-Jewish Arabs. I hated it. Yeah. And then I went to the kibbutz called Mishmacha Emek, which was the leading left-wing one. I can't remember the name of the party. And there they were negotiating with Palestinians in 66. Uh-huh. But they were having nighttime secret negotiations, so I liked them.
Right.
But I was lonely and insecure and too young to be away from there. But when I got back, I more or less decided I didn't want to go again ever, and I've only been back once, which I'll mention to you, in 2015. I couldn't quite cope with, and this is my shame, I couldn't quite cope with high levels of hostility from non-Jews about Israel. It wasn't logical.
You were active by then in the pro-Palestinian movement.
I joined Jews for Justice for Palestinians, so not till then.
And that's one of the things, you know, that I think that we should talk about is that, I mean, I've sort of mentioned it to a degree, but if you support Palestine, they make sure that you pay a price.
Yes.
If you support Israel, you will be rewarded in all kinds of ways. And again, it's, yes, I think, a barometer of the moral courage of people who support Palestine that they do it despite, yes, the attacks on so many different levels. And you can speak to that. Yeah.
No, so I will. So I'm just getting to when I got it. So yeah, the early 80s and 90s, I was critical of a Palestinian woman in my constituency whose anger was very high. I mean, I'm critical and I wasn't critical. I didn't think she was anti-Semitic. I didn't personally dislike her, but I used to get upset and argue very strongly. You know, it's not all bad. Israel's not all bad. I've apologized to her in the last few years and we've become friends. I got it wrong. And then I had almost like a moment just before JFJ, Jews for Justice for Palestinians, was formed, but I suddenly realized, what am I talking about? There is nothing to defend. The Palestinian cause is completely my cause.
Yes.
It was a kind of revelation. I never know exactly what happened. It was like a nighttime. One night I woke up and thought,
really?
You know, really. So anyway, I became a member of Jews for Justice for Palestinians. And again, the first few meetings that I went to in about 2000, I think it was when it was formed, were just Jews, you know, talking. Because I think there was still a slight sense that we were more content saying what we felt when we were Jews. Another limitation.
Right.
Yes. So then...
In what sense do you think it's a limitation?
Well, because we have to face up to the view of Israel and Palestine that's out there. We can't protect ourselves and pretend it doesn't exist and say, why are they so angry? And, right, you know, in that sense it is.
I think I'm a founder member of Jews for Justice for Palestinians.
Yes. Well, early on, my memory is it was a Jewish-only organization. Right. So I'm just saying how, in a way, and when my husband says to me, you've never changed your mind about anything, I say I have changed my mind so drastically about Israel. Not my mind about the politics of it or the issues, but what I can open myself to. It's now so foreign to me, I can't believe I had that concern about. Okay, so let's move on a bit. In 2015, I voted for Jeremy Corbyn. I'm very excited at election. In 2015, my husband, who's much more in the middle politically on every issue, and is a practicing Jew, and I went with a trip to the West Bank with Yahad. Well, at the Jerusalem airport, I think it was Jerusalem, I was stopped for a long time. I imagine it was because it was JFP.
Yeah.
And when I got there, I found that the other people on the trip, actually not the convener of the trip, that they were laughing at the Palestinians, some of them. They were laughing. And when I asked...
Who's Yahad? Sorry.
Yahad is a sort of, I think they call it a soft Zionist organization.
Right.
Other people have had a better experience. But honestly, if my old man wasn't there with all his criticisms of me, I would have had to just go, because really? If when I asked questions, they said, why is Jenny asking such rude questions? And my husband said, they're not rude questions, they're serious questions. When we asked a settler who told us how happy the Palestinians were to have him next door. I said, you know, what do you actually really feel? You know, in the middle of the night, what do you really feel about the Palestinians who are living in poverty just outside your doors? Anyway, and I asked questions of the then English ambassador to Israel, who was a Jew. So Jeremy Corbyn became a leader in 2015, and this is when I really had a serious political moment, which was the beginning of false allegations of anti-Semitism.
Right.
And sorry to be so like Harold Wilson used to talk about what year things were all the time, but anyway, early 2017, yeah, I was phoned up by the person who was putting together Ken Livingstone's defence team. And they decided that they would be able to hope to find Jewish witnesses. I don't know if you know much about the Ken Livingstone case, but anyway, I'm sure you do. And I had recently signed various statements with, I think it was some Jewish lefty women who had signed, and they'd been correspondents. One of the people I'd corresponded with had recommended me as a possible person. I can remember where I was when I was asked, because my immediate reaction was, I'm not sure I want to defend him particularly. The person said, I'll send you the papers. When I read the papers, I was absolutely horrified that he was being accused of anti-Semitism.
Yes.
If you read the stories about what he thought Naz Shah was talking about Hitler, when Naz Shah was actually talking about, he was talking about Martin Luther King, who said, look, I'm being locked up in prison because I went on a march when I was told not to. Sometimes the law is wrong. And that, you know, right. So he was. He
his words were distorted. So egregious.
So yeah. Ken Livingstone thought Nice Shah had said that Hitler, under Hitler, sometimes the law. He got it completely wrong. He didn't realize it was about Martin Luther King when she said sometimes one breaks the law. And he said, stupid of her to refer to Hitler. And then he threw in this stuff about Hitler, which was true. Anyway, there was then the tribunal, which you possibly know about. I'm sorry the story's about me, but you did ask me.
And yes.
So then there was the tribunal, at which you may know the three-person...
this is a Labour Party tribunal.
And Michael Mansfield, that's how I met him. I said I went to see him a couple of days ago at his book launch. He was the barrister. And we were all interviewed separately, so we couldn't hear each other's
testimony.
And then they found him basically not guilty of anti-Semitism. But that night, we gave out a press release, and I was interviewed on BBC about it, about the fact that the chief rabbi said he should be torn apart and put on trial again and executed. So that was really the beginning of the politics. A few weeks later, I was asked if I would consider joining a new group called Jewish Voice for Labour and being either the chair or the president, I think I was asked.
Right.
So that's how I got into it. Sorry, right. Such a long story.
No, that's all right. It's an interesting, we were talking before the recording about when this idea that it used to be, certainly up until I think the late 90s, you could be anti-Zionist and nobody would ever think of calling you anti-Semitic. Nobody would think of accusing you of hatred of Jews, hating Jews for being Jews, given that we are both Jews. That started to change, is my sense, in the late 90s, early 2000s. And I sort of have the feeling that there was even a conference of pro-Israel academics in which this idea was kind of mooted, that why don't we accuse people who, quite rightly criticised the apartheid state of Israel as being that. Why don't we accuse them of Jew hate? And I saw that as a kind of active pro-Palestinian Jew. I saw that being beta tested, as it were. Yeah. They would try it. Those accusations would be tried. They would be beaten back. And they would try a different direction. But suddenly you started to get this accusation. People don't realize it's a very, very new thing, this idea that if you're anti-Israel, you hate Jews for being Jews. And it's absurd.
You're completely right. I didn't know about the antecedents. What I knew about was the way the IHRA was suddenly resurrected from nowhere. Which was actually written off originally. And the original IHRA didn't even vote for the examples of that.
No.
But I noticed it only really under Corbyn because the Labour Party adopted it.
And I don't know whether you want to get into this, but I also think that one of the fundamental, I mean, Jeremy was faced with so many challenges that you can't blame him. But I think that one of the mistakes that Jeremy made was he tried to appease the pro-Israel lobby, the Board of Deputies, so-called campaign against anti-Semitism. He tried to treat them as if they were good faith actors, and they're not. They were bad faith actors. Yeah. They would never, ever accept any apology that he ever made, and he was foolish to try and do it.
Funnily enough, I was talking about this last night at a showing of The Big Lie. He was, what I tried to explain to explain him, it was absolutely fruitless, and all that apologising. He even apologised for the wreath when he hadn't even held up the wreath. He got caught like what it is in the headlights. I was trying to explain to people at the meeting, what I was explaining before, it's incredibly hard for a bunch of non-Jews to deal with anti-Semitism allegations. And the people around Jeremy, I think they gave him the wrong advice. He should have fought it. And by 2018, he'd had enough of apologies.
Yeah.
But even then, when I used to go and see Lotto, the leadership office, I was let in at the back door. You know, they didn't want to be even seen with me.
Yes.
While the JLM were going in every day and the Board of Deputies. So that was the beginning of the hatred of Jews like us, which again is not the most important thing, but it was to silence us on Palestine. Before we forget about the anti-Zionists, I think I mentioned to you, in both my parents' families, because I was the youngest of quite, older people, so I'm talking about the 1910s, 1920s, there were, among the brothers and sisters, there were Zionists, anti-Zionists, communists, right-wing people, but no one accused each other of anti-Semitism.
No,
they wouldn't dream of it. awe of them. And this is the time when we're talking about Jews talking to each other and not non-Jews.
And of course, before the war, the vast majority of Jews were anti-Zionists, anti-Israel. Yeah.
They were.
The war changed their minds.
So what? Yeah, it was the allegations against Jeremy and other people that caused Jewish Voice for Labour been fighting all these years. But as you say, or as perhaps you were going to suggest, the people caught up in this have been Jews ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And this extraordinary hatred of me. I mean, I was being told by a rabbi friend that I'm more unpopular in North London than Jeremy Corbyn. I am hated. I'm absolutely hated. And I think how much does it matter to me? Well, it's
a hell of a price to pay, isn't it? I mean, I get it. I feel like I get it a bit. I mean, if I go to if I go to Northwest London, I feel like, rightly, people are looking at me, you know, rightly or wrongly. But when you live in in Hampstead Gardens,
yes, which is actually
lovely. I mean, I'd love to live there.
I don't anymore want to live there. I mean, people think when I say Golders Green, I'm having trouble from the Haredi Jews. Of course not.
No.
Or the Orthodox Jews, not particularly. It's the liberal voting.
Yes.
Probably Labour voting, except they voted for Luciana Berger this time.
Yes, I think they didn't. Well, they didn't even. I mean, only 23% of Jews voted Labour in 2015 when Labour was led by a Jew.
But funnily enough, that bit of Hampstead Gardens Suburb where I live, which is the borders of, it's very, became very local, is a Labour area. That street is a Labour area. But they were the ones who hated me most because I was apparently sticking up. So I want to talk about, I'm sure you'll want me to do, what really matters. I mean, I'm not just saying that, but what really matters, we all feel, is what is happening to Palestine and Palestinians and this particular media barrage against Palestinians at the moment. The idea that, by the way, if by any chance it wasn't Israel that bombed the hospital, that there haven't been war crimes anyway.
Yeah.
So he said, I mean, in Parliament yesterday, they were discussing, oh, that's okay, it wasn't Israel, so let's just move on and let's hope they don't commit any war crimes. I mean,
every single day, the first child was killed.
But the bit that makes me angry, though, about how we're treated is, I'm giving you a line. A friend of mine wrote to a local Labour MP. I won't name him, though I'm tempted to. She wrote to say that she was very disturbed about the disproportionate number of Jews being accused of anti-Semitism and being expelled from the party, because it seemed to her that something crazy was going on.
Yeah.
So this is what this man wrote back. I'd offer one personal reflection. JVL are part of the problem, in my view, when it comes to anti-Semitism. And I would strongly caution against taking any assertion they make at face value. So she wrote again saying that I was Jewish and was rather upset by this, and he repeated the same line. So we're being told that we're Jews that shelter anti-Semitism. It is absolutely disgusting.
It's Alice through the look. I mean, we hope that one day when we return to a more rational age, this garbage will be seen for the insane through the looking glass Alice in Wonderland bullshit that it really is, you know. But it really, it's a tremendous critique of our media and our culture in a way that these lies can be accepted, really.
What the coverage at the moment, as Barnaby Rain was saying, is absolutely extraordinarily biased. And again, it's so often it's non-Jews telling Jews what they should be feeling.
Yes.
You know, the person interviewing Barnaby was saying, but surely you feel this was a crime like the Holocaust. And he got very angry, rightly saying it's an insult to people in the Holocaust. It's absolutely offensive to make these sort of comparisons. How did this happen? How did this all happen? I mean, is it... is a genuine concern for anti-Semitism in the Labour Party? I rather doubt it. I mean, I doubt there is any concern.
No, it's a tactic, isn't it?
It's
served as a brilliant tactic to sabotage the left, really. That's all it is.
And what do we do about the Home Secretary, the Labour Party, and most commentators talking about the threat of anti-Semitism in the UK and ignoring what's happening to Muslims?
I don't know. You got any ideas?
What I suppose I'm fumbling for is numerically, there are about 4 million Muslims. Numerically, there are maybe 300,000 Jews, as you say, only a small percentage vote
Labour.
So watch the political calculation. I'll tell you what I fear it is, and perhaps you would agree, that people with voices a bit like mine, you know, the liberal establishment has decided that their support is for Israel and for Jewish people. So it's not really about party politics. Well, it is.
Support for Israel is also about support for colonialism. It's about support for nihilism. I saw today in the Independent headline that the head of BlackRock.
Yeah.
BlackRock, for God's sake, the most exploitative US conglomerate has given his thumbs up to Starmer, which tells you something, I think.
Well, yes, although I'm political, I'm never quite sure. I mean, I'm sure you're right that it is linked to capitalism and colonialism, but I don't feel it quite gets it for me, because I think quite a lot of the people who have bought this story and are not only bought the story by anti-Semitism and the Labour Party, but bought the whole story of criticism of being of Israel, being anti-Semitic, I think there's something else. I can't quite put my finger on it. Worryingly, it might be part of educational snobbery. You know, like the snobbery that wants people from Hong Kong and educated from Ukraine to be treated as proper refugees.
Right.
You know, there's the wrong sort of refugee now, there's the wrong sort of Jew, there's the wrong sort of victim.
Yes.
It's a kind of, and perhaps you're...
Well, but if you think of the people, you know, who is being victimized, and to a degree they are being victimized in Hong Kong, who is being victimized in the Ukraine, they are both being victimized by our enemy, our economic rivals, specifically China.
Yeah.
And Russia.
Yeah,
and so it's not a coincidence that we're sympathetic towards Ukrainian refugees because the actions of Russia, I mean, God knows I'm no fan of Russia or the Chinese Communist Party, but they challenge our unipolar world where we are all slaves to the United States.
Yes, and I'm certainly not keen on the clampdown of freedom on Hong Kong or the killing on either side between Ukraine and Russia. But I think I'm probably not a very political politician, but I do always try to find the human understanding of all this. And so the hatred of Jeremy, absolutely extraordinary, isn't it? Or, I mean, I don't think hatred is not quite the right word. The determination to exterminate him politically.
Yes.
I mean, the Parliamentary Labour Party, to this day, you know,
vile organisation.
If he goes into the House of Commons, I'm told, he is shunned by most of the Parliamentary Labour Party. And Conservatives come up and say, "How are you?" Did you know that? Unbelievable.
I mean, if you want, talk a bit more about what it's like living in Hampstead Garden suburb / Golders Green. I don't know whether you.
Yes. Well. The worst experience I had, that's why I bought another bit of paper, was I went to a GC meeting. Do you know what I mean? The Local Labour Party General Committee.
Yeah.
This is the last one I've been to. I'm not going again. So I'm still a member of the Labour Party for a reason I can probably tell you, because I was the only person I know who's completely cleared of the...
Really? Wow. This podcast will put an end to that, but
Yes, I'm not waiting. But anyway, I went to the meeting. We were talking about the IHRA. The only thing that got
We should re-explain this
IHRA is a definition of anti-Semitism. Yes. It's been adopted by the government now.
And I think seven of the 11 examples of anti-Semitism in the IHRA definition are about Israel. And if you think 7/11 of a thing are about another thing, then it's about that other thing. And it's about Israel.
And
it's
the definition itself is very slippery. I talked to a retired Jewish judge who said it's too slippery for any lawyer to deal with. It's this sort of perception, a certain perception that might be a certain perception. And the person who wrote it, Kenneth Stern, who's an American Jew, has disowned it.
Absolutely. And certainly, I mean, the organisations, particularly in the United States, the American Bar Association has refused to adopt it.
Yeah.
A lot of academic institutions in the United States have also refused to adopt it because it's obviously it's a muzzle on free speech. It's clear, which is what it's designed to be.
Yeah, and it's a tool of the
Israel lobby.
So anyway, in my constituency, the only thing that I got the audience, I was arguing against the IHRA, and the only thing I got the audience to be silent for one moment when I said that Jeffrey Beinman, who they all have respect for, the lawyer, was criticised, and I could see they were looking a bit worried. They thought I'd won a point. Oh dear, is it really true? But then I made this comparison that somebody had given to me, which was that Section 29 of the Local Government Act had banned promoting homosexual by teaching or by publishing material. Because somebody had said that there would be no...
This is under Thatcher, yeah.
Yes, and somebody had said in the meeting, as been said elsewhere, if there's no lack, there's no clampdown of freedom discussed in Israel Palestine, because there's no cases have been brought that they've that a meeting had a breach to the IHRA. And I said, well, the reason is because it acts as a deterrent. So I said that I'd heard there were no cases brought under Section 29 of the Local Government Act 1988 because everyone was frightened and the schools just took all the books off the shelf. So I heard some people starting to scrabble to their feet. And they ran out and they rang the Jewish consulate. We've got Jenny Manson. She's homophobic. She's mentioned Section 29 of the... She's compared Jews to gays. So the whole room erupted. And I was told, the next speaker came up and said I was homophobic. So I put up my hand and said, can I please clear this? They said, stop disrupting the meeting. Anyway, it was horrific. So I went home. And Mike Cushman said, I hear you've been, you know, what's going on? Homophobic. The next day, the Jewish Chronicle called me. There's a Jewish, quote, friend in my house would come around to say, sorry, you were upset last night. Nothing happened. You should have just allowed the debate, etc. And they said, we hear you were homophobic last night. So I turned to my friend and said, was I homophobic? Of course not. Will you talk to the Jewish Chronicle? No. So that story was a few months later, the JLM, when they were submitting their evidence to the EHRC.
Equalities and Human... Rights and other fraudulent organisations.
They morphed what I'd said into anti-Semitism. They said it was anti-Semitic, what I'd said. So that went to the...
Equalities and Human Rights.
Who wrote
and...
to me to say I hadn't been found guilty of that.
Oh, hooray.
But what happened then was that John McDonnell was... I'd been selected to... by momentum, would you believe it, to be our parliamentary candidate, the oldest one in the world, standing in my area. And John McDonnell came to support my campaign, because I got to know him. So for the week or so before he came, he was inundated with people writing saying I was an anti-Semite, non-Jews. The constituency secretary wrote, put out a notice saying, don't go to this meeting, it's Jenny, she's an anti-Semite. These are non-Jews against me.
Yes, yes, well, it's like all these... Like the who's the anti-Semitism czar? John Mann, pig faced.
But I, you know, I don't want. Yes, I don't want to
bully.
Yes, and one other example. I was asked to leave a local choir, for the reason being that Jenny supports Palestinians. All Palestinians want to do is kill Jews. So now we are linking it to the Palestinian cause. So I'm afraid. What do I do? I don't. I leave the choir. I left the tennis club as well. I felt uncomfortable there.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not the same as being bombed in your home you know, 30 members of your family being killed, murdered. But it's something, you know, and it's we were talking before again about, I mean, what you know, the price that you pay as a pro-Palestinian Jew is that you lose friends. You know, it's affected.
Yes.
It affected my relationship with my best friend. It poisoned our relationship towards the end of his life, I think. And there's some people that you can, I think, I don't know, you make the decision with some people to not talk about it. Mm. With others, you talk about it and it gets nasty and that's
that. I have a terrible problem about not talking.
Yes.
But I keep on, it goes round and round my mind. It has been for some time now. I don't want to emphasize that this, I don't want to stress this is terrible suffering. Of the 67 people on my list of Jews who've been one way or another investigative anti-Semitism, sometimes in connection with these so-called proscribed groups, there are people who've suffered terribly. I mean, the late Mike Howard died, an East End Jew, with still this allegation. He was actually expelled for anti-Semitism.
I think Linda had a friend, Jewish friend, who was given her notice of expulsion on her deathbed. Mm. It's extraordinarily cruel.
But it's, of course, it's nothing like the... I mean, so I don't even want to begin to...
No, but it's, but, you know, but, it's a thing.
But it's, we have become, and certainly not martyrs, I'm trying to find the right word, we have become, in the UK, it's Jews, and in America, I think, who are possibly leading the, outside the Palestinian and Muslim groups, we are the lead fighters for Palestinian rights, I would have thought.
Right.
I may be wrong, but when I was on the march last Saturday, which you were too, somebody said to me, where are the WASPs? and afterwards, I thought somebody else mentioned it too. In other words, the people marching on the whole were Muslims and Jews. There weren't a lot of black people. There weren't,
and young white people.
I don't want to exaggerate it too, but I do, and I'm not saying that we are the most important group, but in the last few days when you and I are getting, I don't know whether you are getting, I don't do social media, but somebody sends me all the tweets. There is a significant leftist Jewish voice that is questioning every moment of the Gaza war now, every moment of the attacks on Gaza.
In what sense? I don't know what you're saying.
So what I mean is, sorry, it's not just Barnaby Raine. There have been Jewish voices all over the world, in Australia, in America, and here, who are saying, stop this war, it is not defence. No one could ever call it defending.
It's a massacre.
Yes, it's a massacre. It's a massacre. And now who's the speaker who said, don't lie to me? I know, Daniel Levy, who I don't know.
Very good.
Son, he said to the journalist, don't lie to me. It's not a defence. It's no one, you know, don't even use the word. How is this self-defence? So what I'm trying to say is that, curiously, the press and that liberal establishment I was talking about should be listening to all the Palestinian voices in London more than they are. They're not on
it. I noticed one thing, you know, which I think I mentioned this, that on the night of the attack on the hospital, that for once Palestinian representatives were treated with respect, their voices were listened to. And it was such a change, because normally anybody who speaks for Palestine is met with such aggression.
Oh, and they have to condemn the Hamas
four
times in speech.
Before you're allowed to speak about anything else. It was for one evening, you got a pass, you know, because 500 Palestinians have been
killed. So I'm just trying to think back. When you were more activist than I was, well, I was already activist by 2014, but would you have had, I don't know, so many left-wing Jews, verbal and vocal, what is on the media, saying this is wrong? We may have done.
Yeah,
Michael Rosen was there. You were there, probably.
Yeah. No, I think it's got, well, I don't know why. I mean, I think the war crime is now so great that they're having to allow our voices to speak, both Jews and non-Jews. Hmm. I remember in 2009, there was a particularly murderous assault by Israel on Gaza, and there was a press conference, and it was me and like Tariq Ali, but Annie Lennox and people other pop, pop performers. And there was a conference, and that conference was carried live on BBC News 24. Yeah. I don't think that would have happened subsequently.
No.
Before the late 90s, you felt that we, and it, I think that was one of the problems, is this whole debate has poisoned our entire culture, really.
Yes.
Particularly the anti-Semitism, because it's brought in a kind of McCarthyism. It's brought in a kind of invasion of the truth that's really, really dangerous. Yes. Before the late 90s, you could have a discussion. Yes. You could take one position or the other.
Yeah.
Now, on one position, you are lauded as a great, and the other, you are, you know, people who've been fighting racism all their lives are called racists. It's really dangerous state we're in now, I think.
Yes. So I suppose the point I was just trying to make, maybe lamely, was that the spin-off of Jews like us, you and me and so many of us, being the wrong sort of Jew, the silenced Jew, the anti-Semitic Jew, the other side of the coin, though, is that there is more and more speaking out by Jews like us about what Israel's doing.
Yes.
But you might say that there was before, but I think there's much more now. So the Jews in America who are besieging the Congress, and we'd like to do something too.
Yes.
That's what I mean. It's it's solidified what we're doing. It's got that value, if nothing else.
But that's one of the reasons why, as Israel has become so much more clearly a fascist, apartheid, murderous state, is that... And as the general public understands that, the fight back, because we don't matter in a sense. What matters is the levers of power. And our entire political machinery has been captured by pro-Israel groups. And so, it's part of our success is also part of the reason why they're fighting so hard against us, I think.
I think that's right. Now, the population, as you probably know, is much more pro-Palestinian than any of our political parties.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And in America, the Democrats are speaking up more than they ever have done before.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is the only slight.
Well, we did sort of touch on them. I mean, there are 4 million Muslims in this country. I urge not one of them to vote Labour, to form their own parties, or to vote for don't vote Tory, I suppose, but vote for the Greens. You know, vote for socialist parties. The Labour Party disrespects you. The Labour Party has profoundly insulted you. And don't vote for the bastards, I think.
No, quite. Well,
that might get you thrown out of the Labour Party.
Sorry?
So, listening to me say that.
Yes. Well, as I say, I'm the only one who got a sort of apology, but we think it's because our lawyers, a Jewish lawyer, when he heard that I'd been accused of anti-Semitism for going on Newsnight and being bullied by Kirsty Walk, do you know that story? he said, this is the funniest one I had. Let's have a go. So he said that we would actually instruct our normal lawyers, and they began to ask some quite tough questions about the attempt to target Jews and stuff. And suddenly my case was dropped. It was very interesting. And I stay in the party for now. I mean, Jewish Voice for Labour, I must tell people who might be interested in us, you don't have to be a Labour Party member anymore. And there's a lot of pressure to change our name. But some of us who are kind of a bit on the commercial side, you know, we don't want to lose our label.
No.
When people say Jewish
Voice for Labour. Well, you don't have to be Jewish to be in the stinking Jewish Labour movement.
But also Voice for Labour. Well, it's the Labour movement. Yeah. The Labour movement. But have you ever been in the Labour Party yourself?
Hell no. No, I mean, my parents were both, you know, far to the left, really, and I inherited that, I have to say. Seems to me the Labour Party has always been a party that is, its role is to destroy chances of socialism, and, you know, Lenin said clearly, you know, it's a tool to take away the working classes, decent aspirations towards socialism and anti-colonialism and send it down the drain, really, I'm afraid.
Yes. No.
Unfortunately, I have to say also, in all fairness, your bias, that the left is hopeless at organising a response. I mean, it drives me nuts how useless we are. I wish a saviour would rise from those streets.
You mean during the Jeremy period party?
Oh, every time.
They're useless. They fight over words, you know. One word here, one word.
Yes, this resolution, but this word rather than that word.
Yes, there's a marvellous book by Doris Lessing about her youth in South Africa. No, Rhodesia, I think it was, Zimbabwe. She came about political life and all that. There's conversations about statements. Of course, we have it too. Again, I don't want to brag about Jewish Voice for Labour, but actually I think we've managed, surprisingly, to stay together as a group, like our officers, which is, and I think it's because, of course, we're socialists, all of us, but it's a slightly easier programme. We're all absolutely certain that anti-Semitism in the Labour Party was mostly, almost all, a fabrication, a wicked fabrication.
Absolutely,
And in The Big Lie, as you'll know,
I narrated it.
Of course you did. And the non-Jews too have suffered terribly. So we've got that to be, and we all have the same view of
I do wish though we could be better.
How can we get better? I mean, I think
I don't know. Somebody's got to think of something, you know. Yeah, to stop that. And also constantly surprise. I mean, our enemies are so clever.
Yes.
Because it's all they think about, because they're driven by, I think, often a deep psychological kind of, a lot of personality disorders or addiction, you know, that I think that powers people to be, you know, either hyper-capitalist or racist or whatever. Yes. And I think we're so often caught out, oh, I didn't think they were going to do that. Oh, that's a surprise. Oh, you know what I mean? I mean, think ahead, people. Get your shit together.
Yes. So one more minute on Keir Starmer. Yes. So he, if you remember, refused to even condemn starvation, which is a war crime.
Yes.
Water. And as I say, they all seem to have forgotten that there have been 3,000 Palestinians dead already. They just think, oh, good, we'll move on. And maybe there'll be a ground offensive. Maybe then there'll be crimes. Now, we've talked a bit about why the Labour Party is taking this stand. There are a few rebellions. Did you look at the 38 MPs who voted for a ceasefire now? No. They're mainly Labour.
Right, okay.
I think one Conservative.
And I think they're having terrible trouble with local councillors, aren't they?
They are. Local councillors are resigning.
Yeah.
And will it feed through onto the votes? Anyway, these are all just hypothetical questions, but I probably said as much as I'm.
Yeah. So, is there anything else you want to say? Because I think we could probably wrap it up there.
Okay. I just want to say something about the nightmare that this last week has been, last 10 days. I mean, I have just found the nights unbearable and the days unbearable, and all the people I've talked to, Jews and non-Jews, to wake up every night to more bombings, to wake up to the media coverage every day and night. I mean, there've been some bits of light on the BBC, I think. The BBC has not done too badly. There's been some.
Yeah.
But, you know, I remember hearing a BBC journalist a few days ago saying, of course Israel's got the right to take this action. I mean, the introducer says this.
Yeah. You know, there's no of course about the right to commit war crimes.
No. So I just want to, you know.
It's very eloquent.
It's been absolutely.
For me too. It's been
horrible. And I remember feeling the same. The last Gaza war and the one before that, and the treatment of people in the occupation. So when I went in 2015, what I didn't mention was our visits to three Palestinian villages. And in one of them, the speaker, talking about being a civil servant, was a sort of civil servant. He ran this small, poor village. I don't know, you know what it's like, dogs on the streets and children out playing on the streets with nowhere to play on. Not pavements. And he was the person in charge of, I don't know, the electricity for that little town. But I just remember him for some reason because as we left, he said to my husband and me, I'm going to cry now, please, can you do something for us? Can you come back? Can you do something for us? And it's just stayed in my mind ever since. Yeah. We've done F all for them. It's got worse and worse.
Yeah, this was in the West Bank.
It was West Bank.
The shell in the West Bank, nobody's noticed it, but they've killed 80 odd in the West Bank.
But, you know, this wasn't a soldier. This wasn't a radical. Yeah. Not that I would be. I kept on telling my husband that he and the other men, Mike didn't do anything wrong on that trip, the ones who were kind of playing down the fact that people have to go through four checkpoints, if they went through one checkpoint, they'd be ready to punch someone, I tell you.
Yeah.
They would. I mean, you know, we are fighters. We perhaps, because of our history, we're fighters.
Yes.
In my view, I probably wouldn't physically hurt anyone. I hope I wouldn't. But, yeah, we would fight. But this man was just like me, a civil servant, trying to do a job in another country.
Yes.
So I feel we've let him down, whoever he was.
We have. And our government has, and our opposition has let him down massively, and the world has let him down. And, you know, one of the depressing things is, I think human beings are kind of neutral. They're neither evil nor good. You set up the social conditions for them to be. And I think in this situation, the worst of humanity is being allowed to flower. The best of humanity is being driven underground.
I'm sorry to plug my book, but I did a book in 2010 called What It Feels Like to Be Me, when 20 people wrote, it wasn't about me, what it felt like to be them.
Okay.
And I used some stuff from John Updike, the American writer, terribly interesting, about, I said to people, don't write about how many A-levels you got or who you're married to, but what it actually feels like in your head.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, somebody said to me, it was a nice book and I got it published, didn't sell hugely, but psychologists were interested in it. And somebody said to me, why did you choose such insecure people, Jenny? And I said, people are insecure. So at that time, I had a belief in human nature in a sense.
Yeah.
I try to recover it now, which is that almost everybody in their head in the middle of the night have feelings of fear and who am I and am I getting it right? I think they do. Maybe I'm wrong.
I think they do. I don't know. I don't know whether it's, we subsume ourselves to leaders, and leaders are deeply troubled psychopathic people, and they allow the badness the badness in us to flower, really.
And nearly everybody wrote, I'd had men and women, more men wrote, you'll be surprised to hear, more men wrote than women, because I think it was a very, because they were cerebral. It wasn't about who I loved, the language was about what consciousness is like to some extent. So I should make it.
Well, no, because this in the end, I mean, what we're talking about really is, the actions of, what we come down to, we can talk about ideology, Zionism, socialism. But what we talk about in the end, ultimately, is the actions of human beings.
Yeah.
And the actions of human beings come exclusively from their psychological thought processes, don't they?
Exactly.
And in the end, I feel that somehow we need to get inside those thought processes. So the Jewish people, you know, Israelis, Zionists, they're full of fear. They're full of fear. They're full of hatred. They're full of, you know, a lot of human emotions, just the wrong ones in a way. And somehow we need to tap into the right ones.
I don't know what one does, isn't it? No, I haven't lost all that sort of faith, but I look back.
I'm getting there.
That my day of innocence when I got that book out.
Yeah,
the day of innocence, which I have to. I've got a bit more sophisticated since then. But there are. Though, as you say, there is that insecurity in most people, and it can be turned to the good. I mean, it can be turned to the good.
Yeah. Just got to find a way to do.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, Jenny Manson. Thank you so much for that. I think it was another great podcast.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Well, thank you.
Yo, Talal here. I wasn't extremely vocal during that interview because that was recorded over at Alexi's house. Jenny Manson and Alexi sit around his table chatting. And I want to say thank you to Jenny Manson for sharing her experience and insight with us. There will be, at the end of the show, stick around till the end because I will be telling you guys how to support the show. But guess what? A few days after recording this interview, Jenny Manson was back around at Alexi's house and they thought they would turn the mic on and share some more of their reflections on the previous conversation and the current situation as it evolves. So here's a little bonus snippet for you. And then stick around for the outro with me and Alexi. All right, thank you for listening, everybody. Back to it.
So it's now a few days later, and Jenny has had some additional thoughts as the situation in Gaza has deteriorated even further. And I think also the debate in Britain has deteriorated further, or has certainly not adapted to circumstances. We've had the steadfastness, the refusal to acknowledge war crimes of Sunak, and we've had Keir Starmer and his Oompa Loompas all lying about what he said in the first place and trying to, because they're in a terrible panic, because they've taken the Muslim vote for granted, and now they're meeting tremendous anger from the Muslim community. But Jenny had reflections on how the personal is political, I suppose. Say what you've
been thinking. Well, yes, I mean, the first point I want to make, revising what you said about Keir Starmer and Muslim vote, he's still refusing to meet the Palestinian Solidarity Campaign and other Palestinian campaigns. Yeah. Can you believe it? Can you believe it? So he's now running around trying to get the Muslim vote back and ignoring the Palestinians. So it does bring me on to this connection. The thing is, the last few days have been agony for all of us, I think. And the agony is partly about how can the Western world and so many people in the UK in the political parties, probably not the population, not care about any suffering except for Jewish suffering. How could this have happened? And is there a connection? I think there is. With the awful, appalling misuse of anti-Semitism. So stupid. No one looked through it. No one analysed it. People said that Jeremy Corbyn and Jackie Walker were the greatest threat to Jews from Hitler. What were they talking about? And so that the silencing of me and the attempt to shut up Jews like us, I think there was the beginning of I don't even know what words to use it, a crisis of rationality, a crisis of compassion. And the idea that somehow if you're kind to Jews and protect Jews, you can forget about other people suffering. How could it have got so crazy?
Yeah, and I think there's also that point. I mean, it is like, you know, the Pastor Niemöller poem, isn't it? You know, first they came for the pro-Palestinians. Yes. To have that lie of false anti-Semitism, 100% lie, that is now sort of accepted or spoken of as truth in our large sections of our media, is really corrosive, because you start with that one lie and then, you know, where's truth live anymore, you know? I think it's really problematic what has been done by the pro-Israel lobby has had and is going to have effects of a very negative kind, I think, on the entire sanity of our culture, I think.
I completely agree. And if one wanted to say something about the survival of Israel as a proper Jewish and Palestinian democratic state, if one did want to talk about that, which of course would be my ideal, then I think you can also say, as a Palestinian solidarity campaigner said to me a few days ago, if Israel wants to survive as a fair democratic state, the Jews and the Palestinians living together, how can they possibly think that they're going to get support from those people who have assessed their conduct now? What are they doing to themselves? They're making themselves at huge risk in the world.
Well, I think, partly their calculation is that obviously polls in Britain have shown that massively the British public back a ceasefire and really essentially back the Palestinians.
Exactly.
But the calculation of the politicians is they don't count because they have no access to the levers of power, really. And that is, again, just deeply problematic to profoundly ignore the wishes of the vast majority because the pro-Israel lobby has insinuated itself so effectively into the structures, into the power structures. Again, it's storing up trouble in ways I think that we can't dream of.
I think what we're both saying is there's a much stronger connection between morality and truth than you might believe. You know, actually, the lack of truth over this period and over this issue of anti-Semitism and Israel's conduct has led to the worst cruelties. In my lifetime, I didn't live through the Holocaust and other cruelties, but the cruelty to Palestinians now in Gaza, driving them south and then bombing them there.
Unbelievable. And without criticism from our governments. I agree. I hope that ultimately the only all I can say to people, I suppose, is that they have got to find some way to affect the power structure, you know, because at the moment it is the power, you know, the Labour Party is in lockstep with the Conservative Party, is in lockstep with the United States, is in lockstep with the right-wing governments of Germany and the right-wing governments of France. And, you know, or the people of, you know, if they care about, you know, not in their name, you know, if they care about decency and cruelty in the world, they've got to find a way to somehow stop this shit.
I must quickly say, of course, the worst cruelty, what's been happening in Rwanda in the last years. But the difference with this one, again, is that the West is supporting it. You know, the so-called civilized democracies are supporting this.
Yeah, and it negates any claim for us to be, you know, the moral, to have the moral high ground, say, in the war in Ukraine, because we are committing exactly the same crimes as the Russians are committing. You know, it is extraordinary hypocrisy on our part. And, you know, maybe this can go on forever, but it shouldn't.
Okay.
So that was Jenny Manson. Thank you so much, Jenny, she was magnificent and articulate and just amazing, I think.
I was very quiet in that one, wasn't I, that episode?
You were.
I wasn't in the room for the interview. But
it's two elderly Jews kvetching about apartheid.
But it is curious how, like, it's a really large group. And you keep saying elderly, but I have lots of young Jewish friends who are anti-Zionist.
I'm sure you do. I just don't know them.
But it's just such an ignored voice in the Jewish community. And it's very deliberate.
And it's also, I think, what was the figures? The statistic is something like, if you were an anti-Zionist, anti-Israel Jew in the Labour Party, you were six times more likely to be officially accused and taken before a tribunal accused of anti-Semitism, and 10 times more likely to be expelled from the Labour Party. And of course, the reason for that is obvious, because Jews who are anti-Zionist give the lie to Israel. that all Jews support Israel and that Israel represents the interests and the beliefs of Jews. And it doesn't. It goes against
your birthright, your homeland.
All that bullshit, yeah.
And I just kept thinking, because you all, you know, so you keep saying that you're the wrong type of Jew and all that.
Well, that's wasn't... sort of, we're taking that depiction on ourselves. We, in fact, we are, to big ourselves up, we are the right kind of Jew.
Of course. It's just hard not to bring up fucking Badil's book, Jews Don't Count.
Oh, yeah, well.
Because in this case, they don't. When it comes to the voice of the pro-Palestinians, they want to make out that it's all Hamas supporters and fucking
good point.
Animal Arabs.
And, yeah.
I've had a couple days break from absorbing the news too much.
Yeah.
I'm getting sick of being called an animal. You know, human animals. And not that I'm Palestinian, but Arabs. They're trying to make out that Arabs. And
We're different. Racism is being licensed. Certain kind of racism where it doesn't fit the interests of the power.
Yeah,
it's being licensed. It's being allowed. It's being approved of.
Our lives are less valuable. For every day that the war crimes are not condemned, as quickly as everyone condemned Hamas's war crimes, then it's just another day where Arab lives do not count, as full-fledged lives.
Yep.
Anyway, speaking of Arab lives, I am an Arab and I have a life and I work. My job is making this podcast. So if you want to support this podcast, if you want to help us make more stuff, then please consider going to patreon.com/AlexisLPodcast. Help pay my wage for producing and editing this show for Alexi. And it would mean, because I know we want to do more stuff.
Yeah.
And if we have a bigger budget, then we can make more podcasts. This podcast is completely free for you to listen to. We never have adverts on it.
Never.
And we want to keep it that way. And, just maybe to say thanks for the podcast, buy me a beer every month. And that you can do that on the Patreon.
Please. Please buy him a beer.
It would mean a lot. I'm not going to use it on beer, mostly. Some of it for sure, yeah.
Most of it goes on editing this podcast. And how's the Capaldi episode coming along? Have you started work on that yet?
Episodes. I think we chatted with him for so long. We're going to have a double bill Peter Capaldi, Alexis L podcast.
Yep.
Edition, and it's gonna be it's really nice. It's just such a pleasure to listen to. So that I think, unless we get another guest that is very prevalent to the Palestine situation, unless something really big happens that we have to address in the show, I think maybe we'll give you listeners a nice treat of a couple of episodes of Peter Capaldi's life story, early work, the shit he got up to before he was an actor. It's quite funny. I don't want to spoil it for anyone. All right. I think I've done all the shameless plugging.
Okay.
Go to our Patreon. Give us some help.
Did you say what the address is again? Say it again.
Patreon.com/AlexisLPodcast. However, at times like this, if you were to go to map.org.uk or palestineaction.org and volunteered some of your money there instead, I wouldn't blame you. Or do both. All right, I'm done.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Alexis L Podcast. This show is produced and edited by Talal Karkouti. Music by Tarbush Records. Thanks to Audio Boom for hosting us. Please keep your emails coming in at alexislpodcast@gmail.com. Goodbye.